This is episode 25 of the Software Freedom Law Show for April 13th, 2010. Hi, welcome to the Software Freedom Law Show. I'm Karen Sandler.
And I'm Bradley Kuhn. And we're ready to announce, well, I guess we sort of declared, we had, technically have one winner, but there are sort of three winners.
No, there's just one winner.
This one, it's like I said, I want to be like kindergarten. Everybody wins.
No, I think...
I did make a rule, though.
We have one winner, but everyone will get a prize who plays.
You get some stickers and you get some stickers. Everybody gets some stickers.
What's that?
It's an Oprah thing. Oh my gosh. I can't believe you don't know that.
No.
It's like huge. When she gave away the car to everybody in the audience. Like,
she gave away a car to everyone in the audience?
This is like 6 years ago.
I'm sorry.
This was major. It was mainstream news.
I don't have time
news.
To watch television.
I don't watch Oprah. Let me be clear. I did not watch Oprah. Okay. But this made mainstream news when she gave away a car. And in fact, the main reason I know it is because Daily Show did a joke about how somebody who won the car ended up losing money because they had to pay the taxes on it.
I think we should just tell our listeners that it's very warm in the office. It's that weird time of the year where we don't have air conditioning, but it's pretty warm.
And they won't let
you open the windows. A little loopy.
They won't let you open the windows.
We can't open the windows.
Yeah, it's typical New York annoying building crap.
New York offices.
Yeah. It's horrible. So three people emailed in. Two of them were GNUs.
Well, it's funny. I wasn't going to say how many people emailed in, but yes.
I did now. So,
but you did. So
three people. And one person was first. They actually had their own face. Everybody else had a face of a GNU. The other two had a face of a GNU. The exact same picture, as it turned out.
But the first two entries were within like a half hour of each other, which was kind of amazing.
That's true.
But anyway, so thank you for playing.
Yeah. Well, and this funny thing is in this whole thing,
the funny thing about this is that you were joking that you were gonna have to show me in GNUs because I wouldn't be able to see the XFACE in I wouldn't be able to see it in Thunderbird, but I actually installed an extension and it took me less time.
Yeah, because
you were unable to.
Well, I didn't realize that GNUs called external programs to make it work, so right now I'm getting the error. No such file directory, icon to PBM. So I don't have icon to PBM installed. I never realized this, and of course it's been almost 10 years since I viewed somebody's XFACE. So whatever distribution I was running like 10 years ago, I had these programs installed, so it all worked. And I thought, I've used GNUs and it works and yada, 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 but it does not. I'm going to install icon to PBM and make it all working because I've decided to add my own XFACE because the other thing I was going to say that after I said that on the last episode, I looked into the XFACE stuff on the Emacs wiki, and apparently there's another type of header that someone's come up with called just a face header, which is a PNG file encoded. Where it takes up more space, but it's not the pure black and white thing that XFACE is, which is kind of, the guy on his page, which I'll link to in the show notes, said when you looked at these XFACEs, you had to imagine that it was the person because it was such a poor picture.
But I really like that whole black and white aspect to it. I think it...
Yeah, well, I've decided I'm going to put both in my. I'm going to put a traditional XFACE. I'm going to add a face header, and I'm.
You'll be covered.
I'm going to be covered, and hardly anybody will view it. But now that you have the plugin installed,
I'll view it.
You'll see my face all the time now.
I see your face all the time.
Well, I meant you'll see it on your computer all the time, but in two different formats probably. We'll have to see what happens header in and so forth. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to have a contest for people to email in face headers, though.
I like having contests, though.
Well, it won't be a contest, but if you want to email in with your face header, I will see how it looks. I guess is what I'm saying.
And incidentally, I did sign on to the to Pound SFLC today.
For a very short period of time, right? Are you still there?
I'm still there.
Are you still there? This is great. This makes great podcasting. Both of us checking IRC clients. I'm saying hello to Carol on IRC. Isn't that exciting? If you were there that day when we were recording it, you know, when we were recording.
I'm still there.
You're still there? I know. I just spoke to you.
Oh, so you did.
So, okay. So that made for great podcasting. So we finally have, in this episode, the guest we've been promising from ever since our trademark episode.
That's right. Because it's very exciting.
This guest is going to talk.
I always say it's very exciting, but this is very exciting. We haven't had a guest in a little while.
True enough.
I really love it when we get the opportunity to have our clients on as guests, especially when they're talking about something
that, work that you did.
Work that I did, but also a situation that we helped with that actually wound up benefiting the project and being able to look back at it after actually years in this instance is pretty cool.
And it's about, in part, about the project itself. We have some discussion about that, but also about this trademark question that came up and how they handled it.
So we'll be right back.
With a guest. So Karen, we have a guest that we've been promising for a while. We finally got the scheduling all worked out, and we're happy to have Sean Egan with us today.
Hi, Sean.
Hi.
So Sean, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your history of getting involved with free software and open source and how you became a developer, particularly on the Pigeon project, just to give people some background.
Yeah, sure. The Pigeon was actually my first open source project back when it was still called Game. We're going to be talking about today. I was in college when I got started in it. I kind of saw one of my friend's instant messenger profiles mention that he was using Game. I thought, what is this? I checked it out. Didn't know much about Linux at all, open source at all at the time. Looked into it, looked interesting, decided, well, I'm going to install Linux so I can give this a try. Started using Game, started just kind of poking around with it. I thought you could do write plugins for it. I thought that was really interesting. So I started doing some plugins. I found then that things I wanted to in plugins, the plugin API didn't allow it. So I started kind of adding my own additions to the plugin API. So those were my first patches to open source. And eventually, it kind of kept gaining on more and more patches I kept sending. That in 2001, I think, I became the maintainer, which is a position I held until a couple of years ago when I stepped down and gave it to somebody else.
So Game was your first introduction to free and open source software and your first introduction to GNU Linux?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
It's really interesting that you actually installed a free software system for the first time because of your interest in that particular project, which is, I think, probably a pretty unique experience. Most people come to the operating system first and then find the applications. You found the application and it brought you to a different operating system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I heard about Linux before, didn't know much about it. I kind of thought it was all, console-based, didn't realize there was such a thing as a GUI for Linux at all. When I visited the site and I saw it had screenshots, it looked reasonable to use. I thought it was interesting to give this a try.
So, Game, the now Pigeon, is cross-platform. Did you install it on a different operating system first, or did you immediately install a GNU Linux system and then get Pigeon?
At the time, it was still GNU Linux only, so I wound up installing Red Hat.
Yeah, because I remember it got cross platform pretty early, as I recall. But maybe I'm misremembering. When did you guys start porting it to be cross platform?
The project started in 1998.
Because I think Mark Spencer started it, right?
Initially, that's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it started in 1998, and I suspect the first Windows release was 2001 or so. Yeah. And all the work for that was done by this guy named Roland, who kind of similarly, he made a, he was a TiVo hacker, and he made this plugin for a game that would let him show his instant messages on the TiVo screen. Right? So he'd be watching television, and the whole thing would pop up, and so you got a little message, and I thought that was cool. And again, he did it because the game was the only IM client that supported plugins at the time.
Well, he sort of foresaw CNN and the Twitter thing, right? This idea that you'd have random messages popping up from viewers on the screen.
Mm-hmm. And so he did this plugin, and he kind of just posted it on this little TiVo hackers forum, right? And everyone said, like, wow, this is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
But I don't have you know, I can't run game. And so just, you know, because of his little plugin, he went through all the effort just to kind of port game to Windows, just so that other people could run his little plugin. And his plugin has, like, you know, like 25 users maybe ever, and then, you know, Windows game just, you know, took off right. way beyond that.
Yeah. So let's get into this discussion about the name because I've actually trained myself now to start calling it Pigeon because it's been long enough. But you guys had somewhat of a run-in that I know Karen did a lot of work to help you with regard to the name AIM and the AIM protocol and AOL's trademark ownership of that. Do you want to sort of tell us how you first found out about that and what led you to contact SFLC for help and so forth?
Yeah, sure. You know, it started, like you mentioned, Mark Spencer, he started the project. This was right after AOL released kind of this open protocol called Talk and an open source client that talked to that protocol called TIC.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so all the specs were there, the source was all open, and Mark Spencer, he wanted to learn GTK, the graphics, you know, GUI library. And he thought, well, this is, you know, an interesting application. I'll make this, you know, GTK, you know, AIM client. So he named it GTK AOL Instant Messenger. And AOL, like, sent him a letter and said, you know, don't call it that. And he said, all right, that's reasonable. I'm going to rename it GAME, right? And so that was kind of fine for a while. And I don't think that at that time AOL was actually using the AIM name, and they still referred to themselves just as AOL Instant Messenger. But eventually they did wind up, you know, calling themselves AIM and completely changing just to AIM. And again, it was still before I was the maintainer that they again said, all right, now we have a problem with GAME and you can't use that. And at the time, there were kind of a bunch of open source projects on SourceForge that all had AIM in their name. You know, the CAME for KDE, there's a name for NCurses. And they all kind of all get this letter saying you can't, you know, have AIM in your name.
Yeah. Now, from a legal perspective, it's, you know, those situations are somewhat tricky, right? Like, you have a right to refer factually to something when, you know, if you're using a product, you have a right to factually refer to it. And as we talked about in our previous episode on trademarks, it's all about whether consumers would be confused. And so, you know, when you look at something like GAME, you would say, well, does that really sound like AOL Instant Messenger? Are customers going to be confused? So, you know, the legal analysis aside, we don't need to get into that in too detailed here. But, you know, what was it like to get those letters?
Yeah, so again, this is before I was, like, super involved in the project, the original letters. You know, but Mark Spencer, who was still kind of in charge of that, he decided, you know, he thought he could fight it. And there was some pro bono attorneys from American University, I think, who took it off first. And, you know, like a law clinic there, and they were handling it for a little bit. I forget the details. But I think basically this kind of went back and forth for a while, and then somehow it just kind of dropped. And then it took, you know, a couple more years, and then while I was in charge, for them to just kind of out of the blue say, oh, yeah, by the way, you know, this legal thing we've been working on, let's talk about it. And again, they sent it to Mark, because I think he was the last person they were talking to, even though he wasn't involved in the project for years now at this point. And he kind of forwarded it along to me. And then he was the one who kind of found you guys and had me get contacted here.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me, tracing that history, that it basically tracks perfectly the decline of AOL as a brand of its own, and basically the last thing it had yet left that was really a strong brand was AIM itself. So every time, sort of the way the history tracks is, every time they sort of start to feel, wow, AIM is our only brand left, they start to get worried about people using the name more than they would if it was the AOL had lots of brand recognition just for AOL and so forth. So what did you guys do as you're going through this process as far as deciding what the answer was and ultimately deciding to rename? What led you guys to decide the rename was the best option for you?
Yeah, we kind of, like even before we started talking with you guys, you know, we were definitely kind of open to the idea of renaming. Because now by this point, you know, we weren't really an AIM client anymore. It started off as just a name client, but by this point, you know, we supported a ton of instant messaging protocols.
Yeah, it's sort of ironic in a way because you were, you know, to the extent that users thought about AOL when they were using GAME, it was probably helpful to AOL. So it's kind of funny because, you know, taking a step away from that name probably ultimately hurt AOL more than it helped them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I use Pigeon primarily to talk to Jabber servers, so.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. I mean, it was, we've kind of been hearing back from users, like, a lot that, oh, you know, it's a great program, but the name is stupid because you do so much more than just AIM. You know, you just took a G and put it in front of AIM and doesn't really represent what you do at all. And, you know, so it's kind of been, kind of made sense for us to change the name at this point. We had just kind of started with the Google Summer of Code, which gave us, you know, some money that we could spend, you know, to get some new logos and icons and stuff made, you know, to kind of do a whole kind of rebranding, which we just kind of thought would just be fun, really. And so, yeah, I mean, we just kind of felt that it was a good time to change the name, even if they hadn't contacted us and told us that we had to.
Well, and I think one of the interesting things you did is a whole rebranding package with that, because that's when you got the new icon and the new logo and so forth.
Was it hard to get everybody to sort of get the consent and to get your community on board with the name change?
Getting on board with the name change, I think, was fine. Picking a name, that was really hard.
Mm.
We must have considered like hundreds of different names.
Yeah, I remember trying to help come up with names, and nothing I came up with was remotely as good as Pigeon. I think that one of the interesting things about the about your rebranding is that, as Bradley says, it was so strong that what you wound up with at the end was something so much better than what you'd started with.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, originally, you know, it was picked GAME just kind of arbitrary. GTK, the Messenger, is kind of an arbitrary name. The logo, somebody else did one day, right? You know, the icons, you know, I did like half of them, and that's never a good thing. And so it's kind of just like, you know, hobbled together, not really consistent in any way. And so, you know, it just happened that they were telling us we should probably change our name. We had all this money that we could actually pay professionals to kind of come up with consistent icons and logos. We eventually found a name that we all did like, and so it made sense for us.
Now, was there any, besides the name itself, was there other types of stuff that was trademarked? Like I know the little man that looks like the AOL guy. Is something that AOL uses in their branding. Was that an issue for you guys at all?
The game icon did look kind of like it. Mm-hmm. You know, with the yellow guy with the detached head and one arm.
I would argue that it was not trademark infringement.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't think they ever complained about that.
Yeah.
There were other things like they have a service mark on the term instant messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And so even before I think they contacted us, we kind of took on ourselves, all right, we're going to call ourselves an internet messenger instead.
Well, I would wonder what Karen would say. I'm not going to ask her to say about having a service mark on instant
yeah,
messenger.
Yeah, it's funny. It's tough. I love it when we interview our clients, but I find that it's hard for me to figure out you know, what to talk about and what not to talk about.
Yeah, I feel a certain level of freedom of action because I didn't work on any of this myself, so I'm not aware. I'm learning some of this for the first time. Now, as part of the rebranding, you guys also formed a nonprofit to house the project as well, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So talk about how that came about and how you picked the name for that and how that has gone for you guys.
Sure. You know, so again, we just kind of joined the Google Summer of Code and started to get some money. I was kind of, you know, a little frightened that AOL was threatening to sue me personally over this stuff. And so we thought, you know, it made sense to use some of this money, you know, to kind of start a corporation, limit my liability, you know, get some play, get a nonprofit where we can actually keep this money. You know, and use it to put towards the project. You know, we'd never taken donations or anything to that point. So it had never been an issue. And, you know, so kind of just when this thing started up, we said, yeah, I'd like to look into doing that. We chose a very boring name. I remember wanting to come up with some creative names, and you guys said, you know, the IRS isn't going to appreciate your creativity in names, and maybe you should stick with Instant Messaging Freedom Incorporated.
To me, that's inspirational.
Inspirational, I guess.
Instant Messaging Freedom.
Yeah. Its only downside is the TLA has a namespace collision with the International Monetary Fund. That's the only downside.
No, I think it wasn't that we were against creative naming. I think it was more just that of the things that we had come up with at the time, that seemed like the clearest of what you guys were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so Karen, you know, helped us set that up and get nonprofit status.
So you're actually, as I understand it, no longer an active Pigeon developer, but you're still involved in the organization.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, so I started it as the president. Tried to step down as president this time around, just because I'm not really all that involved with the project anymore. But you know, no one really wants to step up and become president, so managed to keep me on for another year or so.
So I think it's this is one of the things we've talked about in the podcast before is that sometimes starting a nonprofit for a project is hard because the kinds of people who are most active and involved in the projects are software developers who often are not the type of people that want to serve in roles like president of a nonprofit. It sounds like you've been kind and willing to continue to do so, but it sounds like you're having some trouble getting other developers to step up and want to do that type of administrative work.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even like a lot of work that we do. We don't do, you know, a whole ton. I could have one board meeting a year, and then maybe an occasional vote here and there about other stuff if we have to, you know, spend money on something. But we one director has resigned in the past year. We're able to fill him in. And yeah, I'm not sure why nobody really wants to step up and be president or nominate themselves. Maybe they're just too kind of timid to nominate themselves, or, you know, in some cases, you know, they actively said, I'm not interested in being president. Kind of don't want the responsibility.
Yeah, I think you'd think that people would be, you know, climbing all over each other to have a title like president, but it turns out that because it's responsibility, it's just not desirable.
Yeah, and, you know, you guys were starting up the conservancy kind of at the same time that we were doing this.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually your situation that in some ways that helped inspire that because we saw, hey, if every project has to go through this, and we saw it was a lot of work for you guys, the thought was, why not have this work aggregated? So you can see yourselves as somewhat of an inspiration for doing the conservancy.
Yeah, in retrospect, I mean, that would have probably been, you know, a better option for us. I think the only reason at the time was that we didn't think that the timelines would match up well and that, you know, the conservancy wasn't going to be, you know, on the ground until kind of after we needed it. But I don't think it actually turned out to take longer than we thought to get everything set up for us.
Yeah, I think it took even longer for conservancy. So
it's been a challenge. I serve as the president of conservancy, and so it's it's been a challenge to ramp up. And we have generally a 6-month delay for bringing projects in still because it's just a lot of work, and we have lots of projects applying. So there is that delay in there with conservancy certainly. But I think the end result is good. I mean, we're glad we have it as a service because obviously, given the experience you guys have been through, having every project have to find somebody to be president. It could get tough.
I think you two are the presidents of the first organizations I ever created at SFLC. I think that's right. Like both of those two were amongst the first. Funny.
We're your presidential
forerunners.
Proteges? I don't know. I'm trying to think of an alliterative thing to call it. So Sean, is there anything you want to tell us about what you're currently working on, or anything you want to plug? We'll give you the opportunity if you'd like.
No, not in the plug. You know, so I come in, tell you my story.
Yeah. Well, it's I think Pigeon is a really interesting project to watch. You know, going from Mark founding it to you taking over to it's still an ongoing project. And since you've stepped back, I always like to see that. I see it as a really healthy thing in a free software community when it's survived multiple leadership. I was about to use the word regimes, but maybe that's not the best word to use. But multiple leadership groups have come through, run the project for a while, and moved and handed off to other people. When you see that in a free software community, it's like one of these like it's on a game or something. You see like extra health points, you know, that it's a healthier project because of it.
And also just, you know, shepherding the organization through the name change and having them come out stronger for it, having a better brand, better logos. It's great. It's taking something, you know, it sounds like maybe you would never have rebranded or renamed had AOL not come after you. And it seems like at the end of the day, actually AOL is a little worse off and the free software project is actually a lot better.
So this is where we do it like a Nelson from The Simpsons laugh. We're better off anyway. So, Sean, I want to thank you for joining us on the podcast. I really appreciate you making the time. I think our listeners will be really excited to hear about the Pigeon renaming story.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Boy, I really love hearing how people get involved in the free software community. I just was really fascinated by Sean's story.
I think his story is probably uncommon to some extent. I don't think many people find a program that interests them and then decide to install an entire operating system because of a program that they don't even use themselves. That's why I was asking those questions about, oh, was he using it cross-platform? It wasn't even cross-platform when he discovered it. He just saw friends had it as their client, which...
Although sometimes you see a cool piece of technology and it moves you, like...
Well, but he didn't see it. He just saw that other people were using something and saw some screenshots, right? It's a big leap to take. I think it's awesome that he took that leap, but it was a big leap to take to say, I'm going to try a whole new operating system because I saw some screenshots of a program my friends use.
That's true. On the other hand, sometimes you see a screenshot or you see some example of something that you think looks really cool. That's the kind of thing that gets people inspired and to try something new.
Yeah, and he was obviously a computer geek anyway, so it probably didn't take much to get him to install GNU Linux in the first place. So
we'll never know. We have no hot tub time machine.
What? Why do you keep referencing? I saw the Rotten Tomatoes show covered that movie and gave it like a 3% or something.
The deal is that I never really go see movies, and I saw a movie, and Hot Tub Time Machine was the trailer for that movie, you know, was showing, and it seemed so hilariously bad to me that now I refer to it. But I've not seen the movie. I don't know if it's any good. I've not seen any commercials other than the trailer I saw. And I forget what movie it was.
Oh my gosh. I was totally wrong about the tomato meter on it. I just pulled it up. It's actually 61%, which is really kind of high for...
Its flagrantly silly script and immensely likable cast make up for most of its flaws.
So now you're promoting this movie. I was just going to read the tomato meter because I said it had a low tomato meter. I think when they covered it, it had a lower tomato meter. But man, that movie does not... I mean, look... The key comedy time machine movies have been made. Back to the Future 1, 2, 3.
You were just saying that all of the best April Fool's Day jokes have been made. Are you going to say that all the best songs have already been written?
No, I don't care what songs. I don't care who writes what with songs. But I'm talking about time machine comedy movies.
Back to the Future. Why don't you see... Hot Tub Time Machine, and let me know.
I'm not going to see Hot Tub Time Machine.
Submit a report.
I may see it at some point years from now when it's on basic cable on a Saturday afternoon and I'm doing work and I turn on doing some like mindless work and I turn on the TV to keep the mindless work going.
What's funny is
that's when I will see it if ever I see
it. It's highly likely that I will never see it, but it's also highly likely that I'll be making jokes about it for the next decade.
Why can't we talk about Back to the Future, an actual good comedy time machine movie?
It's just, it's so old. We could use the hot tub time machine to go back to a time when it was relevant to refer to Back to the Future.
A DeLorean with a flux capacitor.
Because we don't have enough gigawatts in order to do that. Okay, we've gone so far off topic.
Well, no, they didn't have it in the 50s, right? That was the point. That was when they didn't have enough gear. They had it they would have it now. They had it in the 80s.
Well,
right? It was only the 50s that were the problem. Because that's when they had to get the bolt of lightning. Do you not know the plot?
Let's go back in time to the time in our podcast when we were talking about Pigeon Game and instant messaging.
Oh, yeah. Another thing I wanted to add about that. I'll get back on topic. We mentioned Mark Spencer started the project, and a lot of people might not immediately connect the name. Mark Spencer is actually more famous now for Asterisk because he started that project after he moved on from Pigeon, or at that time Game. He started the Asterisk project and then started the Digium business around
Asterisk.
And
he's at Digium now still,
He's the founder, and I assume he's probably still has some title. I don't know which, whether it's CEO or some high-ranking title of some sort at Digium. But he's best known for Asterisk now, not starting Game, but Game was his first. Just like it was Sean's first free software project, it was also Mark Spencer's first one. So actually, technically speaking, I think that's wrong. I think Mark worked on another project before that, but certainly the first one Mark started. So I figured I should.
He's founder and CTO.
CTO, yeah. So he was CEO for a while. I think he really moved to CTO.
I think he was president for a while, too.
A lot of founders do that. Technological founders do that. They moved to CTO later. Bill Gates did that, of all people, for a while. Now he's not even involved. It's just all Ballmer all the time, which is kind of a version of hell, right?
I'm sorry, I'm reading about Mark Spencer.
I was going to say more
enjoyable to talk about.
And to talk to, I'm sure. Although I have talked to Mark Spencer, I've not talked to Steve Ballmer, fortunately. But, yeah.
So...
Mark does talk about developers. He doesn't stand...
Developers.
Right. He doesn't talk about developers by jumping up and down shouting.
It does say that he gives frequent keynote addresses to large technology audiences.
He does indeed. I don't think he jumps up and down shouting.
Talk about developers. Yeah.
So I think this makes a good bookend to some of the trademark topics.
Yep.
Some of our listeners point out that we've covered trademarks multiple times, but I think I think they're one of the areas that people often don't think about initially. Patents are in your face so much, and copyrights are literally in your face because you're creating them automatically when you write software.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that that with trademarks, because it doesn't come up very often, when it does come up, it's often because some company is asserting their mark, and it's very scary. But when you hear the kind of story like the Pigeon story and the rebranding there, you realize that, you know, with a really strong project like Pigeon, that a trademark issue isn't going to stand in its way. And in fact, you know, it's so cool to see how strong Pigeon became through that whole process. And how much AOL probably lost.
Yeah, well, and since Pigeon was focusing on supporting many protocols and supported Google Talk when Google Talk came, or Google Chat, whatever it's called, I don't use it. But the Google protocol when it came out, which is Jabber based and already supported Jabber and all the other stuff that people were using. I think it even supports ICQ, which very few people use anymore. Being able to support all those protocols and not have a name that's tied to one protocol was better for the project in the end. And it's just classic of a big company to not think in that way and just assert the trademark rather than giving them, because they could have given them a trademark license, right, if they wanted to.
Yep. And if you've, or they, you know, I would actually still argue that there was no consumer confusion.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You know, it's just one of those issues of like, well, if you're going to bother us enough, we'll change our name. And at the end of the day, AOL loses out from that.
Right. So. And when they wanted to change anyway. So, I mean, that was ultimately why the decision was made, because that was something they wanted to do, because they were getting, as Sean pointed out, they were getting pushback from their own community of why do you have such a dumb name, basically?
Yeah. But it's possible they maybe never would have changed had they not had, somebody assert their mark against them. But it's really an interesting situation.
And as you can see, I have loaded the tomato meter on Back to the Future, which has a full 96%, a full 35% more than this hot tub time machine stuff.
The problem is, though, that that the people who would go and rate Back to the Future now are much more likely to like it, because the tomato meter did not exist at the time the movie was released. So if you're going to go and try to, you know, and want to rate a movie I think newer movies are more, the meter is more representative of what the general public thinks. Now, I agree that Back to the Future is a great movie and people really liked it a lot. I just don't want a sled hot tub time machine. I haven't seen it yet.
I'm not going to see Hot Tub Time Machine.
You said you might.
Except, by accident.
So which is it,
Bradley? I'm not going to see it on purpose is what I mean.
Anyway, this is perhaps a good time to depart.
Okay.
To the future.
Okay. In 2 weeks, next episode. And people can hear it, not see it.
And you can email us at Ogcast or podcast at softwarefreedom.org.
Well, you shouldn't say it that way because now it sounds like I have to type podcast or Ogcast. POTCASTORUGCSAT.
We need to set up the alias cast at.
Okay, I can make that.
Softwarefreedom.org.
But Ogcast, OGGCASAT at softwarefreedom.org.
And you can donate to us at softwarefreedom.org/donate.
And I'm on the IRC channel, Pound SFLC.
I am also on the IRC
channel. You are now. You won't be when this is released.
I won't be.
I'm sure you won't
Most
be.
Most likely, but you never know.
And they're saying it's an occasion on the IRC channel that you're there. Special occasion. You made a special occasion. You're a very special guest on the IRC channel right
That's
now.
That's great. I like being a special guest.
You're a very special guest.
Well, thanks for joining us. The Software Freedom Law Show is produced by Dan Lynch of HalfBakedMedia.com. Thanks to Mike Tarantino for our theme music. This show is released under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. Why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?